Good morning, everyone. Evening, afternoon, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to another episode of Lunar Crush Live. John, are you staying cool?
No, I'm not staying cool today. It's so hot.
You're sitting very still.
Yes. Yeah. If you don't move, you don't sweat. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Just hold your arms like slightly up a little bit, and you're not gonna like see me like sweating up to my neck today.
I made the mistake of going for a jog this morning too. By the way, that was a bad idea.
You got to get those ice baths going, man. That's what we got. The whole team is doing ice baths now.
Yeah, that'll just melt right away too. So that doesn't help.
So yes, welcome everyone to episode 120 of Lunar Crush Live. Today we have Dr. Weizhi Zhang and VP of Engineering Temujin Lui. I asked him beforehand how to exactly say their names. I think I got close. Director of Marketing. We're going to be discussing Wanchain, community, and answering your questions. So if you do have questions, get out there on Twitter and reply to the thread that this is on, and we will do our best to have those swooped around and answer those for you. Our disclaimer, as always, we do not take payment for our live streams. We bring on fun, exciting people who have dedicated their careers to cryptocurrency, Web3, NFTs, and now stocks. Stocks, that's going to be like a whole nother long list of people that have dedicated their careers to stocks. It could be like almost everyone.
Not to mention level five, new navigation. There's so much more coming. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we're going to have to do our own Lunar Crush Live for Lunar Crush here again soon, which will be fun. So let's hit this intro. Let's bring these guys up and let's make this thing happen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Weizhi, Temujin, how are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Yeah, we're doing great. You did pretty well with the names. I think you did even better the second time.
Nice. Just practice makes perfect over here. So we always like to start, who are you? What's your role over there? Where are you in the world and what's it like today? So maybe Weizhi, you can start with us.
Yeah, thank you, Joe and John. I heard the exciting music. It can be exciting as well. Yeah. I'm Weizhi Zhang, and I have a PhD. I work for Dell for multiple years. Work as a principal engineer over there. Then there was a time when Dell went private again. So I kind of left the company by myself, and then start this an educational company, and that was. At the time when Jack actually started the blockchain kind of enterprise. So we went different directions, and then Jack was able to move his blockchain company very successful. And in 2017, I listened to his talk about blockchain and the possibility of interoperability changing the world. So I kind of decided to help him. So I joined Wanchain. October 2017, and having a wonderful time with Wanchain, and also teaching at the University of Texas Austin, the smart contract development, teaching a course over there, and also co-chairing the Quadchain Interoperability Workgroup in EEA Enterprise Ethereum Alliance, and also working with TEM a lot. So I want to transfer this to TEM.
Busy man over there.
Yeah.
Well. Yeah, well, thanks, Weizhi. Joe, John, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Temujin. You can call me Tam if that's a little simpler. I'm the director of marketing at Wanchain. I'm based in London. It's maybe not as hot as it is in California right now, but it's been raining all day, so that's always nice. And yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Cool. I'd like to go back and talk. You said you're teaching at the University of Austin in smart contracts. What are those classes like? And are they full of people? Are they a little like, did you have a bunch of people signing up and maybe a little bit less people signing up when their Shiba Inu is like a little bit less valuable than it was earlier in the summer? But I'd love to hear just a little bit about like how you're teaching those classes.
Oh, thank you, John. This I did not prepare for this question. Yeah, last semester we have almost 90 students in the class, and this is a Mekong Business School class. So I have Mekong Business students, and also have students from EE, and also have computer science students. So it's a mixture of very very technical students and the business oriented students. So the course has to be very kind of targeted for not just business people, but also for technical people. So I have to have a lot of things that I created myself to teach the students, the kind of very personalized teaching. I almost have 300 slides for the course alone, 300 slides alone. So, and I think, for example, when I teach NFT, I was telling the business students that it's not that hard, because you can write 10 lines of code to create an NFT, and they show them that, and then they were able to create an NFT with 10 lines of code. Of course, imported some libraries from open sources. Yeah, so it's a wonderful experience, actually.
So you have the computer science students that can do it in 10 lines of code, and then you have the business students that are going to ask the computer science students if they can do the 10 lines of code for them.
Yeah, we do. We thought about that, because we do have group project. So the group project will be combined or composed of business students and technical students. And you can see that. When you see the presentation they have, you can see that business student present, and then technical student actually deliver the coding itself.
Yeah. So it sounds very much like every startup I've ever known.
Yeah, it is like that. Yeah.
That's awesome. So maybe Temujin, you can tell us, like, what is Wanchain?
Sure. Yeah. So Wanchain, you're really kind of veterans of the industry at this point. You know, we launched all the way back in late 2017, late 2018, and we're really kind of today a research and engineering focused project that's really focused on blockchain interoperability, as you mentioned in your tweet. So that's really kind of Wanchain's core mission. We really kind of believe that interoperability is the key to blockchain adoption by bridging kind of all these isolated networks. And the way I like to describe Wanchain in more detail is that it's a project that has two halves. So on the one hand, we have a layer one EVM compatible POS blockchain. And on the other half, we have a series of decentralized non-custodial direct cross-chain bridges that today currently connect more than 17 different layer ones and layer twos.
Can you dive into that a little bit? Because it's, you know, interoperability, composability, you know, I'm seeing a lot more now of these kind of like cross-chain like liquidity pools, right? So it's like you're kind of trading cross-chain liquidity. Someone still needs to kind of bridge first, right? And so there still needs to be a bridge somewhere for that to happen. I mean, this is a huge problem, right? Bridges, everything. Yes. Else, you guys have been around for a long time, you've been kind of solving this problem. I mean, what are you seeing out there with the growth potential in interoperability, and can we truly have like atomic swaps where, you know, I'm moving from Ethereum to, say, even the Bitcoin network, as you know, without having like a trusted party anywhere, without having bridges? Is this possible?
Well, here I might tap over to Wade, because something you said, you know, did tickle my ear about the atomic swaps, which I know Wanchain had looked into that previously and kind of reached some maybe different conclusions from other projects. So I'll pass it on to Wade to talk about it a little more technically.
Yeah, well, thank you, Joe. You actually asked a very, very challenging question. There are many factors with it. First, about the uses of it. Well, it's developing very, very dramatically. 2018, we started building the bridge connecting Wanchain with Ethereum. At that time, not many people knew the uses of that yet. So I think Wanchain was the first one to build a bridge to cross asset to and from Ethereum blockchain. And then there are different use cases as well. There's an article published by EEA Enterprise Ethereum Alliance called Cross-Chain Interoperability Use Cases. We listed 12 uses over there. So there are 12 uses that have been published. So different scenarios for cross-chain. And then for the case you mentioned about a bridge from Ethereum to Bitcoin, it's the other way. We can bridge Bitcoin from Bitcoin blockchain to BTC, from Bitcoin blockchain to Ethereum. But there's not much need to bridge Ether to the BTC blockchain, because I think Bitcoin blockchain is more for value retention, not for applications, because Bitcoin doesn't support smart contract. So you can bridge the asset out of Bitcoin blockchain and move it to Ethereum blockchain and let it participate in the DeFi application and other applications, decentralized applications. And also, if the gas fee is too expensive for Ethereum blockchain, you can bridge those assets to other blockchain like Polygon, Arbitrum, OneChain, so that there's a less processing fee and more diverse applications. So there are tons of applications for that. So in to summarize, the cross chain can be cross chain of asset, cross chain of messaging, cross chain of command, cross chain of data. So it's kind of almost like an internet of blockchains. So it has huge potential.
And I'm curious more on that. I mean, like Wejia, you mentioned earlier you joined OneChain to change the world. One of the first things you said in here, I'm just curious, like, where does interoperability fit in that? Like, what do you see getting built because of interoperability, other than trading, other than I want to trade this token and swap it across networks? Like, what do you see built?
Yeah, see, if you look at from OneChain's point of view, OneChain, WAN means wide area, WAN means wide area network or wide area of blockchain, which is to connect different public blockchains. And OneChain also has another product called LANchain, LAN, local area network, which to connect public blockchain with enterprise blockchains. So token cross chain is to transfer value from a public blockchain to another public blockchain. And that alone has huge application already. And you can see even hackers come in to hack a lot of bridges that connect the different blockchains that transfer value. So that has a huge value in it already. Beyond that, there's also the potential to transfer, I said, messaging, data, everything for enterprise blockchain and public blockchains. So when you look at interoperability, it's almost like internet of blockchains. In the past, we have only single PCs. That's just like a single blockchain. And now you need to connect these PCs. It's similar to connecting different blockchains. And you need interoperability for that. And that in that regard, you need the specification, the standard for that. And that's where EA comes in to build the interoperability working group so that different blockchains can talk to each other. So that's what I see the future of interoperability.
And maybe you can just talk a little bit more about like these direct bridges, right? Because that's kind of where, like that is the problem that you guys are solving here, right? Is, you know, like there's multi-chain or any swap or, you know, there's like, I know Seller has a bridge and there's been front end hacks, you know, phishing attempts on some of these things. There's been hacks of bridges that are out there. And so you're saying that by having this, you're not relying on any centralized hub to do this?
Yeah, when we published a paper called the Direct Bridge and Two-Way Bridge. And when we define direct bridge, we mean that the asset transfer does not need to go through a hub. If you look at the Cosmo or some other cases, I don't want to name it specifically, yeah, but sometimes the asset will need to transfer to layer chain and then move it to another chain. With OneChain direct bridge, and OneChain is serving as a registration of the bridge node, but the asset is transferred from the source chain to the target chain directly. So that is a direct bridge. And we also have two-way bridge. So when we talk about two-way bridge, we mean that the native asset can transfer from a source chain to a target chain, and native asset can also transfer from the target chain to the blockchain directly. And then we take the example of Ethereum and Bitcoin. You can transfer Ether from Ethereum blockchain. You cannot transfer Ether from Ethereum blockchain to Bitcoin blockchain, but you can transfer the BTC from Bitcoin blockchain to Ethereum blockchain. So this is a one-way bridge. It's not a two-way bridge. It only transfer from one chain to another. Well, of course, you can redeem it, but the still native can only transfer from one chain to another. So that's two-way bridge. And by one-way direct bridge, we mean that the transfer does not need to go through a central hub that's maintained by a third party.
Gotcha. So I just to even dumb it down even more for myself here, if we have one Bitcoin and that one Bitcoin is going to go from the Bitcoin blockchain network to the Ethereum blockchain network, what happens to the original like Bitcoin that's out there?
Yeah, that Bitcoin has to be locked. When that asset is transferred, it the original one has to be locked. Nobody can use it. Not right. A single party can manage it or own it. And then the one will be wrapped on the or mirrored on the target chain as an ERC20 token. And that's important because you transform the format of the token so that token, which has the same value, can be used on another blockchain with other applications. And that's the value of cross-chain, which is the transformation of the format of the value without changing the ownership. Here, the ownership does not change. You still own the same value of different format of the token. So that's what cross-chain means.
So it's almost like a self-custodied bridge.
Yeah. It's nobody take care of the custody other than decentralized, we call it MPC, multi-party computing, or the smart contract. There's no central custody for the asset.
Do you guys see this as, you know, now that like layer two, you know, there's like, I think in the next 12 to 18 months, you're going to see this proliferation of application side chains. You know, you're going to see like Supernets, Avalanche, C-Chain. You're going to see a lot of this kind of horizontal scaling. And in you know, when that happens, now you need, you know, the demand for interoperability across all of these unique kind of standalone blockchains. I don't want to call them layer ones, but these kind of standalone or freestanding application side chains. I mean, are you guys kind of ramping up for the next 18 months going like, this is our opportunity here to really serve this larger market?
Yeah. Tim, you want to?
This actually connects really well to a topic that I was talking to with Weijia earlier today, kind of about the differences between multi-chain and cross-chain, or at least how we define it internally at OneChain. So the things you're kind of describing now, where you might have like a base layer one who's handling security and a variety of layer twos built on top of it, or like an Avalanche with the subnets, or maybe like a Polkadot where you have a layer zero and all these different parachains attached to it, which all have different attributes. We kind of view that as more multi-chain, which is really, we consider multi-chain to be more intra-chain. And while these type of approaches to interoperability, certainly they have value and they're kind of addressing very specific problems, but it's just kind of creating a situation where rather than having, you know, countless isolated single blockchains that need a cross-chain or interchain solution to connect them, it's just kind of creating a situation where you'll have multiple different hubs. Each hub might have a few blockchains or networks that can interact, but you still need that type of connective tissue to connect the multiple hubs. So it definitely creates opportunities for one chain, but conceptually it's not all that different when you're really thinking about, you know, what we're solving with cross-chain technology. But it grows the whole industry, it brings new people in. And so from that sense, definitely creates new opportunities for OneChain. New types of cross-chain solutions will be needed.
One of those I was reading about was your NFT bridge. And that's, I'm very curious about that and how that works and where you see that going.
Sure, I can give like a high level and then Weijia maybe can chime in. But yeah, at OneChain we have like lots of different types of bridges, token bridges, L1 to L1, L2 to L2, L1 to L2. But you know, fundamentally it's moving a token, just a store of value kind of from one chain to the other. But we're about to launch alongside several projects and marketplaces, these NFT bridges. And you know, NFTs are interesting because definitely they've kind of captured the attention of the mainstream audience, you know, in a major way. And these NFTs have really kind of just become the conversation or part of the conversation of what blockchain actually is. But when we think about crushing NFTs, we have to kind of think a little bit beyond the types of NFTs that we've really seen. Because like most of the NFTs that have kind of gone mainstream and really exploded are more of these digital art style NFTs, which, you know, are relatively straightforward. But, you know, NFTs themselves can represent ownership of so many other things. They can be, you know, physical assets like houses in the real world. They could be, you know, collectibles, which maybe it's a digital art, which is kind of a one of a kind thing, but maybe it's like a digital card collection, which, you know, then there's multiple copies of a single kind of collectible. It could be things like birth certificates or diplomas. And then these also bring in other types of considerations. For example, you know, you probably don't want to have the ability to transfer a birth certificate from one person to the other. It doesn't really make a lot of sense. And so how does that impact, you know, cross-chain and NFT bridges for this type of thing? Because these are a type of transfer. And then you also have different types of like negative value type assets that could be represented by an NFT, like debt or any other type of burden. So all these type of things, you know, are, you know, major considerations when we're designing what an NFT bridge can and should do. But kind of like mirroring the real world, the first version of these NFT bridges are going to be primarily servicing the more digital art style of NFTs. And so they function kind of very similar to what we call like a lock, mint, burn, unlock type of bridge, where the asset on the source chain gets locked in the source chain, and then you mint the wrapped version on the destination chain. So it's similar with the NFT. It'll get locked on the source chain. A mirrored version of it will get minted on the destination chain. And then you have like one extra wrinkle that's involved, where in some instances, if you have, you know, a variety of attributes that are like associated with the NFT, then you might need a kind of a bot involved to be monitoring constantly if the source chain, the original NFT, gets updated. You know, then those updates need to be represented on the destination chain as well. So it's kind of like an upgraded version of that lock, mint, burn, unlock style bridge.
It's really interesting when you start talking about identity. You mentioned a birth certificate. You know, like it's only as good as what can use it. And it's sort of interesting because we've had a lot of projects on this show itself, and they talk about identity a lot. And that's great as long as everyone's building on their one chain. And it's like, you know, it always seems like such a big roadblock with identity. And
yes,
if we're going to build solutions that take identity to a new level, it has to be interoperable. It has to work.
Yep.
Did we lose John or did we lose me?
It's so hot at John's house that it's just drying. He just mentioned to me his internet's being a little shady. I think, you know, a little bit of where he was going with it is kind of thinking about all of the different chains that are out there. And it's almost, you know, the moment you create a birth certificate, right? Like, why can't that just be across every chain immediately, right? Like, are we going to move to this world where, you know, potentially we have something being minted? You know, right now you need to go and create, right? You need to create a new contract on, say, I want to bridge from BNB chain to like Ethereum ERC-20. It's like, oh, I got to go and create those contracts, and then I got to bridge over. Are we moving to a world where the moment that someone wants to kind of create this bridged asset across, or say I have a NFT on ERC-20 and I want to move that over to Polygon, I just bridge it over and it's created on that side? Or do I need to still go and kind of create some sort of acceptance mechanism on the destination chain?
Yeah. So there are two aspects of this one. One is the bridge builders need to incorporate those smart contracts into their bridge and provide the infrastructure. And second one is the user. User need to tell them, because they are the owner of the NFT, right? So they need to tell the bridge to bridge their asset from a source chain to the target chain. Mm-hmm. So that requires two actions. One is the bridge builder to incorporate that smart contract to the framework. And second one is for the user to bridge that. And Tim just mentioned one key point, because which is different from token, ERC-20 token bridge, because the NFT can change on the source chain. So after the user action, the NFT still can change on the source chain. In that case, you need to synchronize the two NFTs And that's a challenge for NFT Bridge. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. Yeah. So yeah. What does I guess the token, the WAN token, so where does that fit into the context of everything we're talking about, and what is the utility and the value there?
Sure, yeah. I can take this one. So, you know, first and foremost, the WAN token is the coin of the WAN chain blockchain. Like I mentioned, there's two halves to WAN chain. There's the bridges and also the blockchain. So the WAN token, similar to how ETH will you know, serve as gas fees on Ethereum, WAN token has that same function on WAN chains, layer one. But beyond that, it comes into play in a few specific situations. For instance, on WAN chains layer one, we have you know, what's a few special features that we don't often talk about you know, too loudly, but you know, WAN chain natively has private transactions, sort of similar to Monero. So these type of privacy transactions, you know, that in their current state, they only work with WAN token. So that adds a little extra value to what, you know, the WAN token can provide. It can provide privacy. WAN token also plays a really fundamental role in securing the bridges. So, you know, WAN chain and Weijia especially has really kind of spent a lot of time, money, and energy thinking about how to secure bridges and make them as secure as possible. As I'm sure you've all noticed, as all these hacks have been happening the last year and a half, 2 years or so. And, you know, WANchain really is doing everything possible to create as safe a bridge as possible. And part of a consequence of these efforts is that the WANchain bridges have a few things that are rare, if not unique, in the bridge landscape. And one of these things is that the assets that are minted via the WANchain bridge are over-collateralized, meaning that the bridge nodes and the bridge node operators, whilst this is a permissionless system and anyone can become a bridge node, they do have to stake WAN tokens so that they can operate as a bridge node. And the total number of WAN tokens that are staked in the bridge itself kind of serves as a quota for the total value of minted assets that can exist at any given time. And so the reason for that is that if there's any type of malfeasance on the bridge, the end user is not the one that's going to suffer, because we'll have slashing mechanisms, you know, that could punish the misbehaving actors. So this is like another use case for the WAN token, we could say.
So, I mean, it sounds like it, you know, it's basically, you guys are like a fully, you know, a smart contracting, like full node platform for bridges, interoperable bridges across as many assets as like you guys are serving, is really what it sounds like, versus a lot of the other bridges out there. It's kind of like, hey, we're going to just hold these things in this one smart contract and that's it. And you don't even know like where those assets are technically held. They say they can be on chain somewhere, but it's, you know, whether they're just kind of like holding them in specific contracts on those chains, where you guys are saying, hey, we're going to operate all these nodes. People become node operators. They have to stake WAN chain. And as being a part of that, you are now kind of decentralizing that process of bridging. Do I have that pretty correct?
Yeah, I think, Joe, you're exactly right. It is the security and decentralization are the most important things for bridges. Everybody can build a bridge for that in one day, but it's the decentralization and the security that matters. And I also want to comment on one thing you mentioned earlier about the scale horizontally. You use that word. Some people talk about scalability, but they do not know the difference of scale out horizontally versus scale up, right, vertically. Right. So that's talking about that landscape, we actually have a picture showing how you scale out horizontally and how you scale up vertically. And our interoperability is that you not only need to do the multi-chain, which layer one and layer two, to cross these chains, but you also need to do the horizontal one, side chain interoperability, and even a heterogeneous blockchain interoperability. You need to connect those. And that's what internet means, right? So we try to build internet or interoperability for blockchains. That's the landscape we have in our infrastructure.
An internet of interoperability. I love that.
Yeah.
And
so it should be our new slogan.
Yeah, seriously, it's a good one. Interoperability.
you just it's triggered by you. Just came out. If you search Google right now, you probably had zero hit.
It's happened.
I'm buying the ENS domain name right now.
Yeah,
I have a question about maybe some of those layer ones that are scaling that way. You know, when you look at BNB chain and you look at, you know, Supernets with or Polygon Edge, you know, it doesn't. They're going to operate and help people operate some of these nodes, right, and kind of get them stood up, and so that there's going to be these side chains. But what do you guys think the long term play is for some of these large layer ones to be going and doing this, right? Because what it seems like is like, hey, you know, you have a token and you've started to hit some scale, gas fees are becoming an issue, you know, or you want to move more transactions on chain. So, hey, we're going to go do an application side chain so we can be our own gas, and we're going to basically spin up what's effectively like a, you know, a test environment on Ethereum, but that's going to be house our entire application side chain, you know, but basically these apps are just choosing a consensus mechanism and then deciding to go from there. But then it's a brand new thing after that, right? They just chose the consensus mechanism, bam, now I'm this new thing. There's no interoperability directly there. You still have to build bridges. But what do you think the play is for some of these layer ones to be going so hard at this market? Is it just node operation and hoping that like people are going to be paying for that, and then that's like the long-term play? Because I don't know where else the value is.
Yeah, I think you are exactly right. Tim and I were having meetings with a project that kind of working on sidechains. And we pointed this out, exactly your concern, we pointed this out to those people as well, because it's easy to provide an SDK, a kind of a startup script so that you can start a sidechain easily. But now the challenge is, how do you mint asset on those sidechain? Who manages it? Who controls it? Right, and who will bring those assets out or in to those sidechains? And there's not just a management of technology, but also project people as well. And that one, we Tim and I do not see a solution for that yet. Okay. That's why one chain still need to know which sidechain to bridge with. We cannot just bridge any sidechain or any source chain, because when you talk about security, any security breach or any hack on a source chain will impact the sidechain, will impact the bridge, right? So the trust on the sidechain or the security of the sidechain is very important. And that one, nobody solved that problem yet. And all the companies, I don't want to name the project name, but none of them has a solution for an open sidechain solution with security. I don't see that yet. So that's a pending question right now, problem.
It's almost like it's a job for like Certik or Hacken. It's like the next level there of, hey, when is your standalone blockchain decentralized enough to be trusted in a way, right? It's kind of like there needs to be some sort of critical mass there of nodes that people say, oh, this is, you know, this is trusted enough that it's not going to, you know, how easy is a 51% attack, basically, right? Like, what is the economic, you know, amount needed to go after it? That's a great point. There's so much to solve over there that I feel like we're just at the beginning stages of it. But I think this is going to be the next, you know, the next big thing that we're all going to try to be solving here over the next 12 months.
Yeah. But as soon as you have someone like Certik or something that needs to be standing by and evaluating, it kind of, you know, defeats the purpose of having an open permissionless SDK that you could just spin up yourself. At that point, you know, you might as well control the door yourself if you need a permissionless system to make it secure in any case.
This is probably where the vertical scaling folks win the argument here. Question in the chat here, and you know, you don't have to answer, I don't know like exactly the context, but two people asked about X rollups and when X rollups in all caps. So
I can briefly address this, because we have announced it or spoken about it and given updates about it in the past. So basically, we had released a paper that was describing X rollups, but you know, as I mentioned, Winechain itself is very much like an R&D focused entity at this point in our development. We're a relatively mature product. Project. And so, you know, we can allow ourselves to take our time. And so part of our process when we are designing new types of products is, you know, we write a paper, we describe it technically before we, you know, just launch it, you know, into the public just like that. And so when we released that original paper, it certainly inspired a lot of our community who got really excited about it. But as we ourselves, you know, started collecting feedback from other people, our contacts in the industry, et cetera, there's definitely parts of X Rollup that we felt still needed to be improved before it was ready for prime time. And as it stands right now, you know, we've taken a lot of the learnings from X Rollup and have implemented, you know, parts of it in other projects that are ongoing with some of our partners, whether that be Cardano or some of our sidechain projects. And so there's really no timeline on us releasing something that is going to be called X Rollups, but a lot of that base technology, you know, is popping up elsewhere in the on-chain tech stack.
Thank you for answering that for Aoki Zubal.
There's another one about T bridges for banks. Banking's an interesting topic. Any thoughts there? Here, I'll load that up there.
Yeah, I think the T-Bridge is a bridge to connect enterprise blockchains with public blockchain. And banks now have CDBC, right? It was a big topic as well. And on-chain's T-Bridge is provide a secure framework to connect enterprises with public blockchain. We do have that infrastructure, and we also have a working model for that. And we actually did submit proposals. There's something under NDA, so I don't want to discuss it here. We did submit proposal to work with big project with banks to work on the bridging the CDBC with public blockchain. Tim, why don't you take over from here?
So we don't step on any toes. So I think, like Weijia said, you know, this is what part of the enterprise suite of interoperability solutions. And so it's just basically the part of the stack that allows a permissioned or private chain to interact with a public network. So I would say realistically, there are a handful of projects that are related to this that are still in operation, but it is by no means on-chain's main focus moving forward. You know, we're far more interested in the public network side of things. And so the tech exists. Works well, but it is not, our bread and butter. Our bread and butter is really connecting public networks, whether that be L1s, L2s, or subnets, and that's really kind of what where we're focusing all our energy these days.
Yeah, and I want to add one more thing here. We also see this Polygon Edge. They are trying to connect enterprise with public blockchain as well. I think the market is not there yet. We were too early with connecting with bank with CDBC stuff, but we are looking for next wave. If consensus, they build application with banks and make those successful, we can provide similar technology as well for that.
Yes, but enterprises are kind of interesting if we're just talking about it from like a high level and not, you know, about specific enterprises. I know I've been listening a lot to this great podcast by the Web3 Foundation, where they bring on primarily kind of people that are working in the Ethereum space, but they do kind of these in-depth interviews. And oftentimes the guests that join are, you know, dealing with kind of quote unquote real world business or enterprises of various sizes. And, you know, one kind of theme that I've noticed pop up a lot is that when enterprises, you know, they start exploring what type of blockchain solutions they make sense for them, there's definitely this bias to do having like a permissioned or private network, because they want to, you know, maintain control, obviously, of their data and their information. You know, why would they give up control? But then, you know, they start approaching their own partners to try to get, you know, their enterprise partners to get onboarded onto their private network, and then they encounter all sorts of friction because, you know, the other enterprises, you know, they don't want to, you know, join a network that is controlled by someone else. And so you're seeing a lot of kind of, regret from past decisions from enterprises who maybe did kind of spin up permissioned and private networks and are thinking maybe it would have made more sense to go public from the start. So similar to what Wei-Jia says, I think a lot of that is still, even though there's huge money on the enterprise side, it's still very early in terms of as they develop their own best practices and things like that. And really that needs to crystallize first before anything like a T-bridge or a standardized enterprise to public interoperability solution can really take off.
I think we're having some internet issues today, guys. I think we've lost Joe, and I keep popping in and out. I'd love to switch topics a little here and just talk about, you know, the community marketing, social. Obviously, we track social analytics across cryptocurrencies, NFTs, and now stocks. But you know, how do you look at the community and your community building efforts? And I was looking at your Twitter handle. It looks like roughly half the time you're talking about Wanchain, mentioning Wanchain, and the other half of the posts are about like community partners, all sorts of different announcements and things. I guess how do you, you're posting 1 to 8 times a day. I should add that in there on average every single day. And so I guess how do you look at your social efforts and your community building activities?
Yeah, it's definitely something that I would say is a mixed bag in terms of our performance. But one thing that that I can say is that we're trying lots of different things. So maybe that's kind of, sometimes it's looking like a mismatch of different types of content as we are, you know, actively monitoring, you know, what type of content is resonating best. I would say in terms of the highlights and those that do perform well, you know, by Wanchain standards is definitely we have, you know, strong community managers. We have some focused on specifically on outreach, which are going well, and as well as our Twitter account, you know, generally performs quite well. We also have like a pretty active bounty program that really gets a lot of our community to participate into a variety of different activities. But we have other channels, you know, that definitely need work and more than anything need to be kind of updated more often. And we have some efforts in place that we are rolling out. And then what we're going to see is, like, for example, more YouTube videos are finally going to be starting to get published on our long since dormant YouTube channel. So we're going to try to revive that. And really, in terms of the kind of short and medium term, is kind of rescuing those channels that already exist that are not being properly shepherded. And kind of get that house in order before kind of launching new channels, whether that be, you know, like a Discord or something like that. Because right now we're primarily operating on Telegram. So, you know, we do kind of rely a lot on the community to help us with these efforts. One thing, you know, that we are quite proud of at Wanchain is that we're not one of those projects who, you know, stick their head in the sand and pretend that everything is perfect. We don't. We aren't quick to ban or delete. We're very open to feedback, no matter how harsh. So we're quite happy and proud of the fact that I don't think anyone can really make a real argument that we are, you know, trying to silence the critics or anything like that. But we're taking it all in. We are monitoring, you know, specific metrics, and are just kind of really hammering away at trying to improve all of our channels.
So you mentioned you have the community that's running a lot of things. I mean, this is one of the hardest things of managing like anything in crypto, is that it's 24/7, all these channels, two-way communication all the time. What kind of army do you have running all that? And I guess are you leading this group of people with content? Are there guidelines that they follow? Like, how does this all work for you guys?
Sure. Yeah, I would say I'm definitely the one who's leading it at a high level. But then we, you know, I rely on, you know, a handful of specific people. So I'm not micromanaging in that sense. But there's a few things in place. So we have been starting to roll out more local communities, like specific to specific locations, particularly non-English speaking countries. So in these channels, there's content guidelines to kind of align with the kind of main channels to make sure that we're announcing the same things, you know, on a proper schedule. And that kind of goes both ways as well, because depending on the state of the mood in a specific local community, they might want to run a specific local community event. And so we'll, in that case, support them as well. But generally, we do align just kind of on content and calendar, and then just kind of monitor and see what's going well. So what was the rest of your question?
Just what kind of army is in place to manage it? And you said just there's people in various areas and you're becoming more localized, it sounds like.
Yeah, so we have like different leads for each country. And so basically in each of these countries, there's like one person that we are kind of formally engaged with that will help with that. And then we also have a team of three or four people who do outreach for us. And so these are also kind of formal outreach ambassadors, I guess you can call them, to try to, reach out to different projects who either want to launch their applications on Winechain's layer one or use our bridges. So we always kind of have to balance those two needs. So that's kind of another hub. And then also have a couple people that are helping us out with social. In addition to the regular community managers, of course, the people to answer the questions 24/7, like you say, provide the tech support. There's a lot of kind of in-between communication that needs to happen too, because so much of our tech team is not native English speakers. So, and the bulk of our community are in native English speakers. So we rely also kind of on our community managers to help bridge that gap.
Fascinating. Yeah, I always love hearing about this because it is a lot of work to manage a community that's all around the world in every time zone and every language. And it's I don't know if there's a perfect blueprint for it, to be quite honest. Probably even Disney doesn't have it down yet, or Coke. I know I've seen Wejia on live streams and other interviews. I saw quite a few. I mean, I guess, how do you look at your content creation efforts around it? I mean, it's one thing to just tweet and post all day. It's another to go to conferences and live streams. I guess, what are your efforts on that front?
Yeah, so I would say that probably over the past couple years or maybe a year and a half, Winechain had really kind of taken a step back from attending conferences. And this is something that, whilst understandable because of everything that was going on with COVID and things like that, kind of hits a project like Winechain more than it might have hit other projects. Because Winechain is dual headquartered in Austin, Texas, but also in Beijing, China. And so I don't know how closely you monitor things that are happening in China, but it's still even kind of locked down now. These type of realities impact a project like Winechain, but me personally and the leadership team as well definitely know that it's important to kind of, especially for an old project like Winechain, to attend these type of events. So we're now ramping that up again. We'll be attending Token 2049 in Singapore later this month. Weijia and I will also be attending another conference in early October in early October in California. Got a couple smaller ones where we'll have representation in Dubai. So we're definitely starting to ramp that up and be able to kind of create content around that from kind of pure media side. So we do obviously do media pitching and things like that. So we have a standard kind of media agency that can help support with that. And we also have some close longtime supporters to help produce video content for Winechain. And so these are type of the type of videos that I mentioned are going to start appearing on our dormant YouTube channel to try to revive that and kind of make that a more vibrant space. So we're kind of tapping into, those longtime followers that already have expertise in video production and who have a profound understanding of everything that's going on in Winechain, which is admittedly a complicated project. The intricacies of bridges, at a glance, you look at different bridges, they might all look to be accomplishing the same thing, but how they're accomplishing it and the downstream effects of the how are important. So having someone to who already kind of knows the project to build that type of video content is going to be helpful.
So guys, as we wind down here, I got a little bit more of a market question. Where and not necessarily like financial and what our price is like, but, you know, understanding, you know, we're in the kind of the depths of a bear market right now across, you know, a lot of different asset classes. Right. And, you know, at the beginning of this, we're all like, it's, you know, all buildle, like, it's like go back to building, like, you know, which I think a lot of us, no matter what we're always doing, you know, we're creating, we're building. It's just a different type, you know, a lot less atoms hitting a lot slower than they were, you know, at the beginning of the year. But as we come out of this at some point in time, what are you guys looking forward to, or what are you hoping to see different this time than maybe the last time we went through this? Personally, like, I can start and say, I think that, you know, a lot of what happened with Terra and Luna, there was a lot of centralized issues that had a reverberation, you know, across the entire market. And I don't know if that's been solved. I don't know if, you know, if the industry has learned our lesson yet, if it's as, you know, where it needs to be as far as, you know, some of the trust that's going on. But like for me, I'd love to see, like, you know, one massive, large liquidity pool across like each asset. Like, how does that happen to where, you know, there's like, when I think about Terra and Luna, I think there's probably like 150 different markets that they had to stabilize all at the same time across different exchanges and centralized exchanges, decentralized exchanges, people bridging across back and forth. And that created a hole that someone exploited, or just serendipitously, you know, things happen there. So to me, that's like what I would like to see change in the next, like, you know, iteration of our industry. But for you guys, I mean, is there anything like, that was just my thing, but like NFTs, you know, are we, you know, going to go to play like metaverse? Are we all going to be living there? Like, where do you guys see this next like 12 to 18 months? And what kind of world do you think we're living in at the end of it? Whoever wants to grab it, go for it.
It's so complex.
Yeah, your brain is still going, still catched up.
Let me give you a first try. We have seen this ICO, and then this DeFi, and then this NFT, and it will be the next hype, right? And according to Vitalik and Joe Lubin, next one will be DAO, DAO, probably. And for one chain, we're infrastructure project. We want to build interoperability and bridges, right? What I definitely want to see is the Web3, and then the enterprises blockchains coming up. And then there will be need for secure decentralized bridges to connect to the enterprises. We have been working on enterprise bridges for 4 years, but we, because of business not ready yet, market's not ready yet, we have to wait. The technology is there. That's one thing. Second thing is the standardization and the specification or interoperability and bridges. The reason you see so many hacks is because they have a short-term hype, right? They just rush in to build the bridges without considering the consequences, right? And we need to have standards. We need to have compliance, and we need to have a specification so that we can have secure bridges. And later on, just the internet, you need to have all these standards, right? RFCs coming in so that they can build all these machines can be connected. And blockchain do not have these yet. And that's where EEA comes in. EEA want to work with standardization. And that's what we see as a big area as well. And that's why I'm working on the Quadchain Interoperability work group as well to push for kind of better standardization and specification. Yeah, and then to tell me, you add more to this complex question.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely there's some things I'm looking forward to, but I'm not necessarily optimistic that it's going to be in the next bull. We might have to go through the cycle a couple more times before I really start seeing what I'm looking forward to. Mm-hmm. You know, from the tech side, we definitely want to see kind of like one of the holy grails of interoperability, which is cross-chain smart contract function calls. But we're probably still certainly more than 12 to 18 months away from that kind of being a widespread reality. But I think it'll be, I'm less interested in kind of what the next big hype thing is going to be, whether it's DAOs or something else. I'm just kind of looking forward to more and more people joining the space. You know, the last one brought in a lot of new blood. And so this is kind of the first time that they're going through a bear market, you know, the bulk of them will probably fall off and swear off crypto forever. But you know, some number of them are gonna stick it out, and then the next time this happens, there'll be kind of more and more so-called you know, crypto veterans in the space. You know, those who have lived through it a few times, and as, I'm kind of looking forward to that corner of the community getting bigger, because I think the larger that community gets, the easier it'll be to, for kind of quality projects, those who maybe have survived one or two or three of the market downturns, those that actually have, you know, proven working products. I think as that part of the crowd continues to grow, you know, they'll find the projects that are quality, and there'll be a larger group of people who are warning the newcomers against the potentially extremely unsafe hot new thing, which will you know, make three or four people extremely rich, but then blow up and cause 80% of the newcomers to quit blockchain forever. So I'm just looking for that slow shift, and I do think it's happening, but probably more than one cycle away.
Amazing. Well, thank you. I'm getting a very calculated vibe from both of you, which I think we desperately need in this space. You know, I was watching the Apple keynote yesterday, and they were talking about the crash detection. So your Apple Watch, if you're driving your car, now knows if you've been in a car accident across, you know, SUVs, trucks and cars. And they were in production on that for like half of a decade before they launched it. And I just think, like, when you said like Wanchain's like an older project where it's like, that's probably been around for half a decade. It's like Apple's just been like having something in beta internal on staging for 5 years before they even go live. But we just don't have, it's a different luxury for them, probably with $100 billion or more in the bank. Yes. But what would be nice is if we take a little bit of that and inject it into, you know, our industry, because I think that's how the maturation process will happen. So I appreciate the both of you being here, coming on today, sharing all your knowledge. There's a wide variety of it, so we really appreciate it. Thank you everyone out there for listening. Check these guys out at Wanchain, super cool. Appreciate you guys. And John, as always, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for struggling through the heat with us.
Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thanks, John.